Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. For this episode, we have part two is an interview with Brian Crawford. I've been a big fan of his work over the years, and we had him on the show. Bulls expert and fantastic writer. You can find him also on Twitter, and we'll give you their handles during the show. We again discuss what's wrong with the Bulls, and it's a little bit more positive spin. Again, that was recorded before the Houston game. I think the night before the Houston game.
I'd first like to give me a little background on you, how you became a Bulls fan, and you know, a little bit about just a little bit of your history before we get into the question.
Man, I've been a Bulls fan pretty much all my life since I was old enough to follow basketball. I actually kind of started following the Bulls around 84, 85 when Michael Jordan came. And, you know, I'd been around the game. My grandfather played, my uncles played, so I would watch a lot of college basketball, like DePaul and things like that on television. Once I got into the NBA, like, Michael Jordan was just kind of captivating to me. Like, he played the game a different way. You know, he's really explosive. He played above the rim, and, you know, everything about him was just cool. And so, you know, I kind of became a Bulls fan just by, you know, watching him. And, like, you know, I used to go to Bulls games prior to when Jordan came, but I was younger and it didn't really interest me as much. But, you know, Michael Jordan was kind of like kind of the spark for my basketball interest. It made me want to play and made me want to follow the game a little bit closely. You know, I can remember, you know, during those days when the Pistons would beat up on them in the playoffs, like, I just remember crying, like, literally, like, right, crying in tears because I wanted them to get past the Pistons so bad and win the championship. And so that's kind of like the history of my fandom. Like, you know, I felt like if a basketball game could make me cry, then, like, I was really, really into it and I was passionate about it. And so, you know, that's kind of how it all started for me. And, you know, that passion never left me, you know, from the times of just being a fan and watching TV and, you know, got tickets and went to a game and somebody, you know, up close and personal covering the game, writing about the players and things like that. And so, man, I mean, I've just been a Bulls fan for as long as I can remember, but it basically started with Michael Jordan.
That's great. And I'm glad you gave me some context where you're coming from, because I'm the same way. I was 10 when Jordan was drafted. So, you know, I grew up and I remember it took us, you know, 3 years of losing in the Eastern Conference Finals to the Pistons before we finally did it, you know. And it was a long process that I don't think in today's game people will give you that much time to overcome a team, right? You know, I mean, that's all I heard after we lost to the Heat in the first year. This team can't beat the Heat. And I'm thinking, well, I don't know. I mean, Jordan's Bulls, they didn't beat the Pistons until year four. You know,
yeah,
really,
exactly.
So let's fast forward to this team. I'd first like your opinion on top three reasons that you have as to why the team has taken a downturn in January.
You know what? I think one of the reasons, probably the biggest reason, is because they came out, you know, they came out so fast out of the gate. You know, it was almost kind of like they had a point to prove from game one. You know, after they lost to Cleveland in the home opener, you know, I think from there that kind of like, you know, that kind of like just kind of set them on a path where they were trying to establish themselves early. And, you know, an NBA season is long, man. And, you know, you can't really come out the gate like that, you know, without running into a wall in like late December and January. And so I think that was the biggest reason. Well, one of the biggest reasons. I think the other is, you know, now obviously, you know, injuries is something that we've been talking about for like 3 or 4 years. And so, you know, they haven't really had a lot of continuity in the starting lineup. So I think, you know, that's a factor too, with, you know, different guys in and out of the lineup. Like, you got Tony Snell starting some nights. You know, you had Tyus Gibson starting other nights when Joakim Noah was out. And so it kind of throws off the rhythm of the team. You know, you look around the league, you know, you look at the team like Atlanta, you know, they've had their core group playing together since opening night. Same thing with Golden State. So, you know, when you have that dynamic where you're shuffling players in and out of the starting lineup, it takes a little bit, you know, getting used to for those guys. So I think that's another reason. The last one, I think, you know, why they struggle is because now they're once again trying to learn how to play with Derrick Rose. you know, he's been out for a couple of years, and, you know, he started off slow. You know, a month ago, Scott was calling when he couldn't make a jumper, and, you know, he seemed to not be himself, and people were doubting it, you know, if he'd ever be that player again. And, you know, now that he's come on, you know, there's been games where you kind of saw it, you know, going back to like the 2010-11 season where guys were just kind of sitting back and letting him do his thing. And so, you know, a lot of that, you know, it takes a lot when you have a player as explosive as Derrick Rose, who is as ball dominant as Derrick Rose. It takes a lot to kind of find your game within that, because obviously he's trying to get himself back into a rhythm. And so, and sometimes that could be the detriment to his teammates. And so I think, you know, I think that's another reason too. So, but I think the biggest one is just really and truly just the way they came out of the gate. They came out pretty fast. You know, Jimmy Butler kind of, you know, established himself, and he slowed down a little bit. But I think, you know, once they get that continuity and they start lining up together, when those guys get used to playing with each other and, you know, knowing where each other are on the floor, I think we'll see a turnaround in, what, March through, or, you know, February through April.
I completely agree with you. I think there is going to be a turnaround. I mean, hey, big picture, at 30-19, things could be worse. So along these same lines, where do you feel this team is going to go? And where do you feel they should be? Where should this team finish the year?
You know what? With the way that the Hawks have been playing, like, you know, at the beginning of the season, I had the Bulls probably coming out number one in the East. The Hawks haven't slowed down at all, even though I expect them to at some point, you know, here in the next month or so. But I think the Bulls will definitely finish top three in the East, not number one, maybe. But I think, you know, either in that two or three seed, you know, I think once you get into, like, March, you know, mid-March and April, I think that's when you start kind of playing for positioning. And, you know, you're kind of looking at your potential matchups in the, you know, in the playoffs, and you're trying to avoid some teams and maybe try to match up with others. So, you know, I think that'll be a dynamic that plays out in the next, you know, couple months here. But I definitely think they'll finish top three in the league. My best guess, because I don't think Toronto and Washington can, you know, kind of stand or, you know, hold on to their momentum. So I'm thinking the Bulls at best will finish probably second, no worse than third.
Agreed. I'm more worried about Cleveland still than Atlanta. I don't know if you feel the same way. Have you been watching them lately?
Oh yeah, God. You know what? I watched Cleveland, and, you know, I've seen how well they've been playing. I think they won, like, six straight or something like that. You know, I'm just one of those people, man. Like, I don't really put a whole lot of stock into what a team will do in the regular season. I think for me, you know, even though – every team in the NBA is going to get hot and they're going to go on a streak, and, you know, Cleveland is no different. I don't think, you know, the rubber meets the road in the playoffs. And, you know, for me, my position on Cleveland hasn't changed. I just don't think that a team that is comprised of people a bunch of guys who've never even been to the playoffs can actually make noise in the postseason, especially not in year one. So, you know, I think they're playing great right now. But, you know, in the playoffs, everything changes. You know, in the regular season, you moving on from one team to the next. In the playoffs, you got to beat the team four times out of seven. And that's going to be the biggest challenge for them. So even though they're playing well in the regular season, it doesn't really impress me too much. I just don't think they have what it takes, even with LeBron, to, you know, make a deep run.
Yeah, but what did Bosh do before he got together with LeBron? You know, LeBron covers up so much. And he's so great. That's the only team that scares me in the East.
Well, I mean, to the Chris Bosh point, you know, he didn't do much, but he did get Toronto to the playoffs twice. You know, Kevin Love has never been to the playoffs. Kyrie Irving has never been to the playoffs. You know, J.R. Smith has gone, but not as the key guy. So, I mean, they have some guys with experience. But, you know, I think, you know, in a situation like that, it's just going to take some time for that, you know, for that continuity to come together. I don't think it's going to happen as quickly. In Miami, you had a bunch of experienced players that knew how to play, and they had deep runs, and so, you know, they understand what the playoffs is about. It's going to be a learning experience for a lot of those Cavs players.
Okay. Fair enough. Good points. What about if the Bulls lose in the first or second round? Would you consider that a disappointing result?
Oh, no question. I mean, not only will it be a disappointing result, but you're bound to see some changes happen after that, you know. A lot of talk has been about Tom Thibodeau possibly, you know, leaving his role. That'll definitely happen if they don't get past the first round. So, you know, I think if they get bounced early by, you know, by next season, we'll have a totally different team, not only just in player personnel, but also on the sidelines too. So that's not something that I'm hoping for, but man, if it happens, it's going to be a big shakeup in Chicago. Believe that.
Agreed. So this is where the only time I've ever had any, you know, differences with you or of opinion is on this issue. I don't get the idea that you feel that would be a good move. If the Bulls lose in the first or second round, I am 100% for firing him, because I feel he would have failed with, to me, the most talented team in the East. And I get the idea that you don't agree with that assertion.
No, not really, because, I mean, Tom Thibodeau has had, his fourth or fifth year. You know, he's had a lot of time on the sidelines, and, you know, and we've seen how great of a coach he is. But, I mean, if that happens, you know, if they get bounced in the first round, yes, that's major, that's a big deal. It's definitely a fireable offense. But, I mean, to Tom Thibodeau's credit, more than any coach in the NBA, he's done more with less. Like, he's had his best player out for 2 years. His team has been injured from the time he took the job. And, you know, they still have won no less than 45 games. You know, they made it to the second round of the play. They beat Brooklyn and got to the second round of the playoffs shorthanded. I know a lot of people like to mention that Washington Wizards series last year. But, I mean, they were falling apart then. So, I mean, Tom Thibodeau has never really had a chance with his full complement of players to see exactly what he can do, with the exception of that first year when he went to the Eastern Conference Finals. And then after that, Derrick Rose hurt for 2 seasons after that. So, I mean, I don't agree that Tom Thibodeau should be fired, simply because, I mean, how many other good coaches are out there, man? Like, that's the thing. It's like, you know, if you get rid of Tom Thibodeau, you basically gambling that the next guy that you bring in is going to be better than him. And I just don't know if that's the case.
Yeah, I keep on pointing to the fact, I think he bears some of the responsibility for injuries, especially with Noah last year. Noah was half the man he was in January in that Wizards series, because he averaged 40 minutes a game in the final 2 weeks of the season against, you know, subpar teams that pounds at a metal attitude is just, it's just foolish. It's just ridiculous to expect a center to be playing those kind of minutes. And I think he's doing the exact same thing with Gasol. Gasol's averaging 35 minutes. That's ludicrous. Gasol should be at 28, 25, 26, 27 minutes a game. He's not going to be at his best in April, and that's the primary issue between management and Thibodeau, is his minutes. And unless he rectifies this, I don't see how you could keep him, because it's an issue every year.
Well, the minutes thing, like, I get it, but at the same time, I also think it's a little bit overblown. I mean, because, you know, you have guys that play a lot of minutes every year. Like, Kevin Durant led the league in minutes played last year and won an MVP. You know, a lot of people in Chicago, they want to tie the injuries to minutes. And I don't know. I just don't feel like that's fair, and I don't think it's the case. You know, I think it's more or less a case of bad luck than anything else. You know, these are conditioned athletes, man. Like, you know, and these guys train year round. If, you know, if anybody can play a heavy minutes, it's these guys. Now, if you want to talk about from a strategy standpoint and say, hey, you know, if the Bulls are 15-20 with 5 minutes to go or 4 minutes to go left in the game, you know, why don't you pull your starters? That I can't really argue with.
Right.
You know, Tom Thibodeau does that a lot, and, you know, and I question it, you know, because sometimes he just leaves his guys in there too long, especially when the game's in hand. So that point I get, but I mean, I just don't think tying the injuries to the minutes that he plays his guys, I just don't really think that's fair, because, like I said, there's other players around the league that play just as many minutes as some of these Bulls players and never get hurt.
Yeah, but it's a two-way street. It's not just guys playing too much. It's, why is Mirotić playing all of a sudden 14, 8, 6 minutes a game? Why is Kyle Korver, in his only 2 years with the Bulls, playing 20 minutes a game behind a bum like Keith Bogan? You know, I mean, why is Kirk Heinrich, who's shooting 20% over the last 6 games, still playing 25 or more minutes per game? It's like a two-way street. It's not, I know, to me, I think, like I said, the minutes some guys are playing are just far too much, especially Noah and Gasol. I mean, Noah's been put on a restriction, thank God, this year, complaining to Van Gundy about it. But it's also the guys like Miritich, McDermott, going back to Korver, going, you know, even Jimmy Butler in his second year should have been playing far more than he did, and you got Bang leading the league in minutes when there's no reason for it.
Well, you know, I think a lot of that goes into, like, coaching philosophy. You know, you mentioned Miritich, and, you know, you mentioned, you know, McDermott. Those guys are rookies. And, you know, Tom Thibodeau has never played rookies that much. In fact, at the beginning of the season when he was playing Miritich and McDermott a lot, I was actually shocked because I know how not only Tom Thibodeau but just coaches in general just feel about rookies. They just don't play them because it takes a while to get acclimated to the NBA and, you know, they just won't make an immediate impact, you know. So I think, you know, that part I get. But as far as, like, you know, some of the other points, you know, like playing, you know, this guy X amount of minutes like Kirk Heinrich, I mean, what's the alternative? You know, Kirk isn't the best shooter. You know, he isn't the greatest scorer, but he does still play defense. I personally don't think they should have resigned him for two more years, but that's a totally different subject. But, I mean, you know, when you look at some of the positions where guys are playing heavy minutes, there's not, you know, their backups just really aren't very good. And, you know, again, you know, that becomes a depth issue, and depth is an issue when you have injuries and things like that. So Thibodeau, he kind of has his style, and yes, he plays guys hard, but his philosophy is that, you know, he came up in the era when he played with, you know, he coached with Jeff Van Gundy. He coached down in Houston. He came in an era when he's used to star players playing, and I think that's kind of his mentality. And I don't think that's going to change. Even if he leaves Chicago, wherever his next destination is, he's still going to coach the same way.
Yeah, and I agree with you, and that's, I mean, you just hit on what I have the problem with. You know, I mean, I just drives me nuts that this guy just is so stubborn and refuses to change. And, you know, I understand what you made a good point, right? Who else are you going to go with? I want Heinrich down from 27 to 15. There's 12 minutes there, and they should be divvied up among Aaron Brooks, Miritich at the three, put Butler at the two, put McDermott at the three. You have options. You have many options there. And you know, so that's, you know, we could go on ad nauseum about his minutes issue, but it's a major issue because I think we both agree the Bulls have not once in his tenure, in my opinion, even the year he went to the Eastern Conference Finals, gone into the playoffs with the team really, you know, healthy and roaring and ready to go, like the Spurs have been, you know, like other good teams have been. And
no,
I think there's some responsibility for that.
Well, let me approach the Spurs point. I think the Spurs are a really bad example. And I say that because Greg Popovich, he has no choice. He has to rest those guys. He has an old roster. Like, his best players are all in their 30s. And so, you know, you can't play those guys heavy minutes. You know, you have to kind of, you know, you kind of have to strategize and divvy up the minutes between the guys that you do have. And so I think that's one of the reasons why Pop does it. Now, I understand why people get on that train is because the Western Conference is so tough and the Spurs have won, you know, been at the top of the standings every single year with him doing this, you know, coaching this way. But, you know, he's got, what, 3-4 Hall of Famers on that team? You know, these guys know how to play. You know, there's no questions about that. Tom Thibodeau doesn't really have that luxury. So every time his team takes the floor, he's going out there and he's trying to win. And like I said, you know, on one hand, it's great that, you know, that he's aggressive like that and he's trying to get the W every time out. On the other hand, yes, you know, it gets guys tired and, you know, they're not always at their best. But, you know, those things happen, man. Like, those are the, you know, that's the ebbs and flows, the ups and downs of the regular season. I don't really get too bent out of shape about that. You know, my thing is, and like I said, you and I, we can both agree on this, we want the team to be healthy in April. You know, we want them to go in there at 100%. Actually, nobody goes into the playoffs 100%, but relatively healthy to where everybody can play and contribute. That's what I'm looking for. You know, the minutes thing, I get it. It's going to always be a sticking point with Tom Thibodeau, but I don't think the Spurs is a really good example because Pop just has to do it. He has no other choice.
Yeah, I mean, but the Bulls have quite a few guys in their 30s now, right? We got Gasol, we got Dunleavy, we got Heinrich, we got Noah. I mean, and, you know, these guys aren't spring chickens anymore, and I don't know. I feel he's overnight that team's becoming pretty old, right? We got obviously we got Butler in his prime, and Brooks, another guy, 30. It's an older team, you know. It isn't a young team, and you know. But let's go off the minutes issue for a second. I want to go. Let's go to X's and O's. How do you feel about the way he's utilized the talent he has on the offensive end this year?
Well, I mean, obviously, Paul Gasol is having a great year. You know, Jimmy had a great first half of the season. Aaron Brooks off the bench has been that, you know, that explosive scorer that we saw with, you know, DJ Augustine and Nate Robinson. You know, Joakim is still coming back from knee and ankle issues. I actually think the offense has gotten a lot better. You know, Tibbs came in with the reputation of being a defensive-minded coach, and he was that from day one. But there were a lot of times when he got out-coached, and, like, you could clearly see it. I don't think that's really happening anymore. You know, I think he's kind of created an offense where everybody touches the ball. You know, those guys, they come off a lot of cuts and they come off a lot of screens. And, you know, they get easy, you know, easy looks at the basket. They just have to knock them down. What I would like to do is kind of see them, you know, get out on the break a little bit more, maybe play a little bit more up-tempo and push the ball. But offensively, that hasn't really been a problem for me. I think my biggest concern is probably the rebounding. They haven't been as good a rebounding team, you know, as we've seen over the past 2 years. And the defense has slid back a lot. But I think, obviously, you know, that's kind of a trade-off. You know, you're going to have a good offensive team, but not necessarily a great defensive team. So, and I think, you know, the last couple of years, offense has been a key sticking point where it was like they won the game on defense because they couldn't score. Now they can score, and it seems like they can't stop anybody. But, you know, defense is just one of those things that I personally feel like it's going to work itself out, you know, between now and the end of the season. I think those guys are going to kind of recommit themselves on that side of the ball. And the scoring, the offense isn't going to go anywhere. But I do think the defense is going to get better.
I do agree with a lot of what you're saying. I think the defense will get better. But, you know, the big now narrative now is everybody's blaming it on Gasol and Noah's playing out of position. Do you feel that that's the bigger issue? Or is the bigger issue just the decline physically of Joakim Noah?
Yeah, I think Joakim being hurt makes a big difference. You know, last year he was first-team All-NBA Defensive Player of the Year. I think he was, number one and number two for, you know, assists and big men behind Mark Gasol. I think his health has become a bigger issue. But, you know, I don't necessarily have a problem with the way him and Powell play off each other. I think that high-low look, you know, that the Bulls employ between those two guys is great. Because you got Paul Gasol who can step out and, you know, knock down a 15, 20-foot jump shot, which moves Joakim closer to the basket, you know, to where he can get rebounds. And, you know, every now and then he might be able to knock down that free throw line jumper too. So, the big man dynamic I like, you know, I would just like to see Joakim Noah get a little bit healthier because, you know, once he feels better physically, then his energy level goes up and he plays a lot harder. You know, he's a lot more active. You know, he seems to be all over the place right now. It just, you know, he's just not playing that way because physically he's not there. You know, he's still dealing with the knee and now the ankle. But I think once he gets his body stronger, which I predict will be by the playoffs, I think we're going to see, like, that front court tandem between him and Pau Gasol is going to be something that I don't think nobody in the East can deal with, not even Washington when they have, you know, they have Nene and Gortat. I don't think those guys are going to be able to deal with Joakim and Pau once Joe gets back to, you know, playing like his regular self.
No, I agree with you completely. I think that's a lot more of the issue, though, is, I know everybody now is saying, well, Joakim should be playing the five and, you know, bench Paul and put, you know, start Taj. My point is, the thing that made Joakim Noah great, frankly, is that he was able to guard point guards in the league. He was able to go off a pick and roll and stick a point guard, stick a two guard. He was the most versatile, probably the best defensive big man in basketball. And now all of a sudden the story is, well, he's got to go out and guard the fours, and that's hurting his game. He got torched by Jordan Hill. He's getting beat consistently. To me, that's far more of an issue than the issue of, you know, should we have Taj starting ahead of, you know, Gasol.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts.
Yeah, no, I don't necessarily think it's a position issue. You know, I think you can rotate those guys between the four and the five and, you know, not miss a beat. I think one thing that gets lost in that particular narrative is the fact that, you know, last year everything ran through Joakim. The entire offense ran through him. Like after that ball crossed half court, he was the first guy to touch it. And he either, you know, he either made a play for somebody else or he put that ball on the floor and he took it to the basket and made a play for himself. That's all changed, you know, with the emergence of Jimmy Butler, you know, the offensive prowess of Pau Gasol, and now with Derrick Rose being back, it's almost like Joakim is trying to figure out once again how he can be effective on the floor and where he needs to be in order to make an impact. And so, you know, that's a difficult learning curve for him, too, for a guy who the past two seasons has been the centerpiece of that offense to kind of now fall back into more or less like a, you know, ancillary support role. That takes a little getting used to. But, you know, again, I think the dynamic of health and injuries is the reason why this team looks so, you know, just so disjointed at times because, you know, those guys are just not used to playing with each other. You know, you got guys taking a backseat to others and trying to figure out how to, you know, play in a new role. So the Joakim thing, you know, I think a lot of these conversations that we have online, you know, reading the newspaper, lack a lot of context. And people forget the way things are set up the year prior and just kind of focus on the present. But if you look back at how things were, it kind of it helps everything else to make sense.
Yeah, you're making me feel a lot better, Brian, because I agree with 99% of what you said. I mean, and the sky's falling, right? That's all you hear right now. But I kind of, in the back of my head, felt, too, that, man, we got a lot of time left. A lot of time for the playoffs yet. We'll get this figured out. And I kind of feel better after hearing the points that you've made. I think they're all right on. I do want to get one final question. I do want to hear what your take is on Derek. Because, you know, I think Joakim's problems have been, on the offensive end, is him getting used to playing with Derek again. And I think you kind of alluded to that fact that everything was run through him. Well, he's not the guy now. He was basically the point guard on the team, if you look at it in a weird way, last year. Now it's Derek. What do you feel about Derek? His performance so far, more important, is he going to get back to where, you know, we need him to be to win a title?
Well, I mean, I guess in the interest of transparency, I got to be, you know, open about Derek. I actually love the kid, you know, just because of where he's from. I'm from the same neighborhood as him, so I'm probably not the most objective person when it comes to Derrick Rose, but you know, just from a basketball standpoint, I think he's going to get, like, we're seeing him get better with each and every game. You know, you look at the Golden State Warriors game. Yeah, he had 11 turnovers, and 11 turnovers is like tragic for a point guard. But then he turns around and he hits game winning overtime. You know, he is getting back to where he needs to be physically. And once he, you know, once he makes that physical transition to the mental, and once he connects that, I think he's going to be a pretty good player. You know, like you said, the sky was falling a couple months ago when he couldn't make a shot. Now he seems like he's gotten his legs under him, and all of his shots look good. Like, he looked off balance, and now everything looks fluid. And I think Derrick Rose is only going to get better. You know, a lot of people have kind of written him off because he hasn't played in the last 2 years. But I still feel like the Bulls are going to go as he goes. And, you know, anything that they do is going to be, you know, because of him getting back to the player that he was prior to his injury. So I have full confidence in the kid that he is going to get back to that level where he was before he tore his ACL and then damaged his meniscus. I don't have any, you know, any doubts about Derrick Rose at all, because the guy's hungry. He wants to prove himself to not only his teammates and the organization, but also to the people that's written him off. So you can never, you know, you can never discount a guy's hunger, and you can definitely never write off a player like Derrick Rose.
Brian, I can't thank you enough for joining the Bullseye. I really appreciate you coming on. I got to run. We got to definitely have you on again, I hope, before, you know, the playoffs start, if you don't mind. If you don't mind, it has been an honor to have you on the show. Is that okay?
Certainly, man. Anything you need, just let me know.
All right, man. I enjoy your work. Where can people find you?
Man, you can find me in the Red Eye. You can find me on Twitter, Mr. Crawford, MRCRAW4D. I actually have a feature coming up in NBA Hoop Magazine on Jimmy Butler. So, you know, I'm always writing. I'm always doing stories. So you can read me, tweet me, whatever. I'm around.
Sounds good, Brian. Again, thanks for coming on. Looking forward to reading your work, and go Bulls.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Bye-bye.
Have a good one, man. Thanks again. I'll post up in the next.